It's 6 o'clock here on WMBR Cambridge. You're listening to Sferio, the local voice of our hemisphere. I'm Kendra Johnson. I'm joined in the studio today by my co-hosts for this show, Monica Gallegos and Jasmine Park, who are going to be joining us and listening in and maybe speaking up from time to time. We have an hour of news, a little bit of discussion, some clips from an event that happened 2 weeks ago here in Boston about the New Bedford raids. They were commemorating the one-year anniversary of that, so that'll be the focus of our show. And of course, we'll have some weekly features, including Radialistas Apasionadas, as always. But of course, we'd like to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this station do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. And since we are the local voice of our hemisphere, we hope you'll take the opportunity to contact us if you have a question, comment, or story to share. You can call us during the show at 617-253-8810 or email us in English, Spanish, Portuguese, or even French at sferio@wmbr.org. Antes de empezar, quiero traducir un poco a español lo que acabo de decir, que este programa vamos a poner unos pedazos de una grabación que hice en un evento hace 2 semanas, donde conmemoraron el primer aniversario de los eventos en New Bedford, allá con la maquinaria. Y que vamos a poner unos cortos segmentos de música y de plática de aquel evento, y que como somos la voz local de nuestro hemisferio, esperemos que se sienten libres de contactarnos aquí en el estudio. El número de teléfono es 617-253-8810, y también nos pueden escribir en español, en portugués, en inglés a Sferio, S-P-H-E-R-I-O, @wmbr.org. And before we begin, I'd like to send a special hello to any of those listening from around the world at www.wmbr.org, and those listening through the Sferio archives located at web.mit.edu/hemisphere. Well, all right, I think we'll start off our program today with a little bit of music from Lila Downs, and then we'll get right into some of the segments from that New Bedford event, starting off with a little bit of video that tells us some of the story. Of course, you won't be able to see the video, but you'll be able to hear the speaking of some of the women who were detained in that factory 1 year ago in a couple of weeks. And then we'll be hearing some updates from lawyers who've been working on the cases and some songs related to that. And of course, a Radialistas piece a little bit later. So stay tuned. You're listening to Sferio. This is Lila Downs.
Cuentan que en Oaxaca se toma mezcal con café. Cuentan que en Oaxaca se toma el mezcal con café. Dicen que la hierba le cura la mala fe. Dicen que la hierba le cura la mala fe. A mí me gusta el mole, que soledad me va a moler. A mí me gusta el mole, que soledad me va a moler. Se muele también el pan.
el chocolate. Cuentan que en Oaxaca con agua es de chocolate. Dicen que en la fiesta Torito se ha de quemar. Dicen que en la fiesta Torito se ha de quemar. Para que haga su manda por la pasión de soledad. Para que haga su manda por la pasión de soledad.
That was La Cumbia del Mole by Lila Downs. So that was a song about how one makes mole, which is an absolutely delicious Mexican dish. She's singing about how you grind up the peanuts and the chocolate and you mix it all up. And it just makes me really hungry. So before we go on to the main topic of our show, which is the 1-year anniversary of the New Bedford raids, we have here Jasmine Park, who's from Amnesty International. And sort of a human rights themed show. She's going to share with us some of Amnesty's upcoming activities related to some other human rights issues in the world. So, Jasmine, thanks for coming.
Hi. So I want to advertise an event that's going on this week at MIT. So we are planning something for Bhopal chemical disaster. And just to give you a little background about the issue that happened in 1984 in Bhopal, India, there was a gas leak by this chemical company, Union Carbide. And it was like a huge disaster. And after that happened, it never got really cleared up. Like, people who were affected by it didn't get health care or didn't get any medical help or government help that they needed. So now the survivors are marching towards New Delhi to ask for their rights. And we want to raise awareness about that issue at MIT. So what we are doing this week is having a lecture on Wednesday at 6 p.m. in room 6120 at MIT. So we are having a host. Her name is Aquini Freechild. She's an Environment Health Fund activist, and she's going to talk about what happened in Bhopal. Also, we are having fact section in Lobby 10 at MIT. So if you guys are passing by that area, please stop by, and we'll send facts to Indian Prime Minister to ask for rights of the survivors. So please drop by. And another thing that I would like to share is what happened on Tuesday in Gaza Strip. So I'm just going to read an article that I found on Amnesty International website. Please listen carefully. And if you want to find more about it, you could go to www.amnesty.org or come to our meeting, which should be like the meeting day should be posted on our website, which is www.mit.edu/amnesty. So here it goes. The Israeli army demolished more homes in Palestinian villages in the occupied West Bank on Tuesday morning. The homes and property of Palestinian families in the villages of Hadiya, Jiflik, and Farish Beit Dayan in the Jordan Valley area of the occupied West Bank were demolished. Amnesty International's researcher on Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories witnessed the demolitions. Donatella Rivera described the scene. In all the places, most of the people are children. These homes mostly have three generations, the grandparents, parents, and children. In Hadiya, there were four families. In Farish Beit Dayan, five families. All of the people have had homes demolished before, but this time they had no warning. The people were very, very upset. They were running to get their things out of their homes, but the bulldozer just went on demolishing. Soldiers of the Israeli army arrived early in the morning in jeeps accompanied by a bulldozer and then demolished the buildings where the four families were living. The families in Hadiya have lived in the same area for generations, herding herding their sheep and goats and cultivating land on the Jordan Hills. They have come under increasing pressure from the Israeli army to leave the area. The same four families had their homes destroyed in February this year, and other homes were demolished several times by the Israeli army in 2007. The demolitions are part of intensified efforts by the Israeli army to expel Palestinians from the area of the Jordan Valley. Much of the Jordan Valley, including the Hadiya area, has been designated by the Israeli authorities as a closed military area, and the army has been exerting increasing pressure on local Palestinian villages to force them to out of the area. For years, the Israeli authorities have pursued a policy of discriminatory house demolition, on the one hand allowing scores of Israeli settlements to be built on occupied Palestinian land, breaking international law, while simultaneously confiscating Palestinian lands, refusing building permits for Palestinians, and destroying their homes. The land vacated has often been used to build illegal Israeli settlements. International law forbids occupying powers from settling their own citizens in the territories they occupy. So if you want to learn more about this issue, please visit amnestyusa.org or read about Israeli-Palestine-Gaza conflict on any newspapers. I'd recommend BBC. And also check out our Urgent Action on Amnesty website. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Jasmine, for sharing that information with us. And I think it's neat that your segments from Amnesty International kind of add a global perspective, but they all really relate back to the United States and to our support of Israel, of course, and the fact that there's nothing that the United States is doing against Dow Chemical in the Bhopal situation, too. So I think it's really relevant to analyze the role that the United States is playing in the world, because we, of course, form a part of this hemisphere. So, of course, you're listening to Sverio, the local voice of our hemisphere. I'm Kendra, and I'm here with Jasmine, Monica, and Freilan, who's just come in, which is wonderful. We're going to go now to a short clip from a documentary produced by Jenny Alexander called New Bedford Stories. And this documentary has interviews with some of the actual detainees from this New Bedford raid, which happened on March 6th of 2007, when immigration officials raided a factory in New Bedford, Massachusetts. And that factory makes vests and backpacks for the U.S. military, actually. And during that raid, 621 undocumented workers from Latin America, Portugal, and Cape Verde were arrested. And here's some of them telling some of their stories about what that arrest was like. You're listening to Sverio, and we'd love to hear from you if you'd like to call in 617-253-8810.
Mientras estamos escuchando este documental pequeñito, nos pueden llamar aquí en el estudio a 617-253-8810.
Nos llevaron al aeropuerto, nos llevaron amarrados, los pies, la cintura, las manos, todo.
Cuando íbamos en el avión, a nosotros los trataron tan mal de que no podíamos hablar. Teníamos que ir ahí bien humillados, ni siquiera levantar la cabeza, porque una muchacha levantó la cabeza así y quiso ponerse el gorro de la suegra. Y entonces uno de ellos llegó bien enojado, se lo quitó de un solo, hasta la hizo así para atrás. Y con la comida, ya cuando íbamos en el avión, que los pusieron una cadena aquí en el estómago y estábamos amarradas de las manos y de los pies también. Cuando llevaron la comida, que iban pasando o dando bolsas de comida, los tiraron, así, como que éramos perros.
Queríamos ir al baño, nos llevaron, no nos cerraban la puerta del baño. Y ahí a la par estaban los hombres, ni nos dejaban lavar las manos. Nos tenían amarrado las manos. No podíamos bajarnos los pantalones porque estábamos amarrados.
So that was a little segment from the documentary New Bedford Stories, produced by Jenny Alexander. And I'm going to go now and read a little bit of the translation so that our English language listeners can understand what that was about. So it's talking about the what happened when, after the workers were arrested, they were put on planes and sent to Texas. So this is just a brief part of their story. And the women are telling us that they were astounded by how poorly they were treated, that they weren't allowed to talk, that they felt humiliated because they weren't even allowed to lift up their heads. One girl lifted her head, and then because she wanted to put her hood on, but one of the men came very angry and yanked her hood off. And then when the food came, they had put chains around their waists and tied our hands and feet. So when they brought the food, they brought it in bags, and they threw it at us like we were dogs. And then when they took us to the bathroom, they wouldn't let us close the door. So the men were standing right beside us, and they didn't even let us wash our hands. Since our hands were tied, we couldn't wash our hands. We couldn't even lower down our own pants because we were tied up. So you can imagine, you know, this is just one segment in their story. After they were detained in Massachusetts and many sent to Texas and held for a while. And, you know, now we have some more upbeat segments of the story as we hear from some lawyers and some people at this event who were talking about how many of them have been released. And I believe actually only one of the over 350 who were taken is still in detainment. So I think we'll go now to a little Guatemalan prayer that we have from a elder, a Mayan elder named Juana Pacheco, who was a guest on Sferio some time ago. And I want to play this because we'll learn later that some of the strongest support for these workers, once they were detained, came from a group in New Bedford called Maya Quiche, which is a community group that sort of the heart and soul of it is based in the Mayan community there. But they also do work with other immigrant communities. And so this is just a little prayer before we get started, a little blessing from a Mayan elder.
Mantio shugu shuleo, mantio shitatvito, mantio shinansako, shukhti wichichnata, yamalari wiki abla, baka wichinim konoge, de prenda tolos nacioni, tatvito, nansako, Tat kaha nam paloma. Ayo, corazón del cielo, corazón de la tierra.
And now that was Juana Pacheco. Now we're going to Annabel Lucas, who will be talking, who's one of the, the director, I believe, of Maya Quiche, and who will be sort of introducing the next segment.
Muy buenas noches.
Good evening, everyone.
Mi nombre es Annabel Lucas.
My name is Aníbal Lucas.
Soy el director de la organización Maya Quiche de New Bedford.
I'm the director of the organization Maya Quiche in New Bedford.
Donde fueron arrestadas 361 personas.
Where 361 people were arrested.
Y antes que nada, pues agradecer a las organizaciones quienes se movieron para poder defender a la comunidad que les fueron arrestadas.
So first of all, I want to just thank all the organizations and people who put themselves together to defend the rights of the people who were arrested.
Y en parte de ellos, pues gracias a Dios también en el esfuerzo de los abogados, pues se han quedado acá y en partes también se fueron deportados o salieron voluntarios.
So, due to the help of those organizations, of course, many dedicated lawyers, there were some people who've been able to stay here, others were deported, and still others left voluntarily.
No dije mi identidad, soy de Guatemala, indígena, de Quiché.
So I didn't give my identity, my culture. I'm from Guatemala. I'm indigenous. I'm from the Mayan population, Mayan people.
Mi primer idioma es Maya.
My first language is Mayan.
Segundo idioma, español.
So Spanish is my second language.
Estoy tratando de aprender el inglés.
And I'm trying to learn English.
And Portuguese.
And Portuguese, too.
Gracias.
Thank you very much.
Maya Quiche Centro Presente and Center to Support Migrant Organizing CSIO. We want to thank all of you for being here with us tonight. Tomorrow is the 1-year anniversary of an event that caused suffering for hundreds of immigrant families and changed the life for many members of our community. Today, 1 year later, we are here to send a message of hope and solidarity with the workers, and to say that the struggle for justice continues. En nombre de Maya Quiche, Centro Presente y el Centro para Support Immigrant Organizing, CSIO, queremos darle las gracias a todos ustedes por estar aquí el día de hoy. Aparte de eso, queremos lanzar un mensaje muy grande para decirles que la lucha del pueblo, la lucha de la comunidad migrante sigue. Un año atrás ocurrió un evento que marcó para siempre la vida de nuestras comunidades y llenó de dolor a cientos de nuestras familias. Y al día de hoy queremos remarcar y lanzar ese mensaje a todo el mundo, a nuestros gobiernos locales, a las organizaciones hermanas, a través de los medios de comunicación, para decir que la lucha del pueblo inmigrante sigue. Gracias. También queremos dar las gracias a Edgar Jack por la presentación multimedia que preparó para nosotros esta tarde, y por supuesto a Jenny Alexander, quien es una productora excelente e independiente de este documental, que vimos solamente una parte, pero nos muestra el dolor que sufrieron cientos de familias el año pasado, el día 6 de marzo. We would like to thank Edgar Jack for the multimedia presentation that he prepared for us this evening. And also, we want to thank Jenny. Thanks, Jenny. Alexander, what is Jenny? Thank you, Jenny, for this excellent documentary. And now, we would like to present Sergio Reyes, a man who has been active in the social and economic justice movement for many years. Sergio will perform for us a beautiful song, another beautiful song. Ahora quisiéramos llamar a Sergio Reyes, un hombre que tiene muchos años de estar en el movimiento pro derechos de migrantes y justicia social y económica. Sergio nos va a deleitar con otra canción. Gracias, Sergio.
¡Pionero!
And that was Sergio Reyes singing a song at the event about the New Bedford raids last week. Or last week, no. The raids took place 1 year ago, and the event was actually 2 weeks ago. And during the time that we were playing that song, we actually received a caller who I hope I have on the line with me right now. His name is Raul Salina, and he was involved with the Mira Coalition, and he's now working for an organization in Somerville and working with immigrant and specifically Mexican communities. And he has an announcement for us about an upcoming event. Raul, are you with us? Oh, he's not able to hear us. I have to take a look at what my situation is here. Why aren't I communicating well? Oh, I think there it is. Raul, are you there? He's not there with us. You know what? He's still on the phone. Okay. Well, I guess we'll have to go to another segment, and I'll try to get this set up working again. We'll listen now to some lawyers who are talking about the actual status of the cases when they're working on getting these detainees released.
Quiero presentar el elemento más importante cuando migración arresta a las personas.
So I want to present to you now someone who represents a really key element to a situation when someone gets arrested by immigration.
Que para nosotros fue muy importante la ayuda de ellos, y sin ellos no tuviéramos las personas acá.
So for us their help was central, and if it weren't for them we wouldn't have our people here.
Y tuvimos que viajar hasta Texas, Arlington.
We even had to travel as far as Texas, Arlington.
Y para poder hablar con las personas en la cárcel.
In order to be able to speak to people who were incarcerated in jail.
Aquí con ustedes, John Carrera, que solo hace la carrera.
So tonight we have with us John Carrera, someone who is always working hard for the cause.
Es un honor que presentes así, y yo estoy aquí hablando para muchos de mis compañeros que han trabajado en estos casos, como Andine de Catholic Social Services, Doris de South Coastal, muchos de mis compañeros de Greater Boston Legal Services, Elizabeth está aquí de PEAR, y hay muchos otros abogados que han trabajado en estos casos, así que muchas gracias por decir eso. Yo creo que mi trabajo esta noche es hablar un poquito de dónde están los casos, y explicaros y decirle dónde estamos, en qué es el camino adelante de nosotros. Detuvieron a 361 personas, y muchas personas que están aquí saben quiénes son y cómo han sufrido. La película lo enseña un poco, porque ustedes sufrieron tanto. De los 361, nosotros pensamos, porque nunca inmigración nos ha dado un análisis exactamente de dónde están las personas y quién salieron y no salieron, pero para nosotros nos parece en este momento que han salido casi 200 personas, así que han salido más de 50% de las personas que detuvieron. Eso yo creo que es una victoria grande para ustedes, porque ustedes sufrieron tanto y han hecho tanto, su comunidad ha hecho tanto a trabajo de Aníbal y de Maya Quiche, de muchos otros, encima de eso, de PEAR, y nosotros encima, de los abogados también. De los 200 personas, bueno, el otro lado es que han deportado ya casi 160 personas. Eso sí es una cosa que duele mucho, porque muchas personas sufrieron tanto para que le respeten sus derechos y todavía le deportaron. Y eso duele mucho, y siempre oímos mucho de eso. El problema es que en este momento hay un compañero que se llama Sabino García García, que todavía está detenido. Él es el último y todos estamos pidiendo que le dejan salir por razones humanitarias. Porque él tiene un caso, así que ellos le tienen ahí, legalmente le pueden detener, pero también el gobierno le puede dejar salir por razones humanitarias. Y todos estamos pidiendo, hasta estamos recibiendo llamadas de Guatemala diciendo, déjale de salir, por favor, es tiempo que le dejen salir. Pero de las 200 personas, muchos ya están avanzando con sus casos. Están pidiendo asilo, están yendo a la corte. Y esta comunidad es una comunidad que está cumpliendo con todos los deberes que le ha dado inmigración. Están yendo a sus casos y están siguiendo con sus casos. Y nosotros sabemos que muchos de ustedes tienen casos bien fuertes porque salieron de las guerras de América Central. Hay tres jóvenes, por lo menos tres jóvenes, que ya han tenido, que ya tienen sus tarjetas verdes, van a vivir aquí. Hay muchos otros que están en el proceso de tener y ya, ya le han dado permiso de trabajo por otras razones y están siguiendo con sus casos y así seguimos. Así que por el próximo año o dos años vamos a seguir con estos casos. Y nosotros esperamos que con la lucha de ustedes, con la lucha de la comunidad, todos vamos a seguir adelante y ojalá hay una política en este país que cambia y al final del día todos estamos juntos. My job is to talk a little bit about, first of all, I really want to thank Aníbal for what he said. It's important. Aníbal is somebody who's really played a huge role in this one. We went to Texas together. It was an incredible experience of 2 days of going from one detention, interviewing a lot of people, 3 days, going from one detention to another and interviewing a lot of people, and Aníbal was always there. But I also wanted to say to Aníbal, on behalf of all the lawyers who are working on this, and there are a number of people who have worked on this, for example, Andine from CSS, Doris from San Frosto, Elizabeth from PEAR, and a lot of other lawyers from PEAR, and a number of colleagues from my office. I thank you for saying that. My job is to talk a little bit about what's going on with the cases right now. And one of the things I think is important to say is that we believe, even though the government has never given us an exact number, they've never really accounted for what's going on, we as a community have come together. We have sort of kept records of what's going on. We're checking in with clients, etc. And we believe around 200 people have been released, which is an incredible victory because, as far as I'm concerned, this government wanted to pick people up, whisk them away to deportation mills in Texas and out the door. And the truth is, over 200 people are out and they're going forward on their cases. Unfortunately, that means about 160 people have been deported. And that is very painful because a lot of these people, almost all of these people, in fact, all of these people suffered incredibly as they were picked up in the factory, processed through Fort Devens, which was, as was said in the film, it was like a security camp, and then taken on planes as if they were terrorists to Texas. It was a very, very overwhelming ordeal. Those people fought. Many of them stayed until the very end as far as it was that they got removed. We know that there's one person left, and he's got appeal, and we're asking the government to release him for humanitarian reasons. His case is on appeal. He was denied bond, so it's, you know, legally they can hold him. But we're saying, and we're even getting calls from people in Guatemala, from priests, from a bishop saying, it's about time to let him go. He suffered so much. He's the last one. Let him go. So this is what we're asking. Of the 200 people, there's about three, juveniles who were granted green cards, and there's a couple of others who are in the process of getting them, which means that they can live here for the rest of their lives. Okay, they can go forward, they can go to school, they can work, they're part of our community, and now they're on their feet and they're moving on. There's a number of other people who've got work authorization in different ways. Some because their cases are going forward, others because they got deferred action, others because they're, you know, applying for different things. And most of the other people are going forward on their cases in court. They're filing applications for asylum, cancellation of removal, adjustment of status. We know personally that there's a number of very strong asylum cases that we're going forward on. That means that for the next year or two, we're going to be fighting these cases out. And the community that we're representing, the clients that we have, are incredibly strong people. We're still going through a lot of adversity because a lot of them don't have work authorization. A lot of them are still overwhelmed and traumatized by what went on. But these our clients are amazing. They keep on coming, and they keep on coming, they keep on pushing, and they're the ones who, in fact, remind us of their hearings, remind us that it's time to get food, to go forward and to prepare for things. They're amazing people. And so for the next year or 2 years, we're going to be taking these cases to court. We're going to be presenting them. Now that people are out, that working with their community, working with their lawyers the way it should be, they are preparing their cases and going forward, and we hope that we can honor them by doing right to their cases.
So that was, again, a recording from 2 weeks ago at an event in downtown Boston about celebrating the one-year, not really celebrating, commemorating the one-year anniversary of the New Bedford raids. And I think it's really quite an appalling story to hear and to know what our own government has been doing to the workers in a factory that were making equipment for our own army, for our military. And I think it's appropriate to put it in with a show with our other discussions of human rights violations in other parts of the world that we heard earlier. I think we'll go on now and hear some news from Froilan, who has always has his news prepared, and we weren't able to fit them in right at the beginning. So, Froilan, if you could share some news with us.
Yeah, I'll start with this continuation of the Colombia-Mexico story that we were discussing last week. In Ecuador, the family of a Mexican student seriously wounded in last week's cross-border attack on the FARC rebels is calling for legal action against the Colombian government. The parents of Lucia Moret say their daughter was visiting the FARC camp for a research paper when Colombia attacked. She is currently recovering from a deep shrapnel wound. Lucia Moret's father, José Luis Moret, called the strike an act of state terrorism. En español, la padre de una estudiante herida acusa a Colombia de terrorismo de Estado. En Ecuador, la familia de una estudiante mexicana gravemente herida en el ataque transfronterizo de la semana pasada contra los rebeldes de las Fuerzas Armadas Revolucionarias de Colombia, la FARC, está exigiendo que se tomen medidas legales contra el gobierno colombiano. Los padres de Lucía Moret dicen que su hija estaba visitando el campamento de la FARC para una investigación cuando Colombia atacó. Actualmente se está recuperando de heridas profundas de metralla. El padre de Lucía, José Luis Moret, dijo que este ataque había sido un acto de terrorismo de Estado. Another Latin American news. The Bush administration has opened a process that could add Venezuela to the list of states sponsoring terrorism. According to the McClatchy News Service, the State Department has launched a preliminary legal probe into Venezuela's alleged links with Colombian rebels. Colombia said it found documents proving Venezuelan ties following its military attack on the FARC based in Ecuador. Venezuela denies the allegations. The State Department currently lists North Korea, Cuba, Sudan, Syria, and Iran as countries supporting terrorism. En español, claro, el gobierno de Bush dio inicio a un proceso que podría incluir a Venezuela en la lista de estados que fomentan el terrorismo. Según la agencia de noticias McClatchy, el Departamento de Estado lanzó una investigación legal preliminar contra los asuntos vinculados entre Venezuela y los rebeldes colombianos. Colombia dijo que halló documentos que prueban estos vínculos tras su ataque militar contra la base de la FARC en Ecuador. Venezuela niega estas acusaciones. Actualmente en la lista del Departamento de Estado de los países que apoyan el terrorismo se encuentran Corea del Norte, Cuba, Sudán, Siria e Irán. Just continuing on Latin American news, of course. Continuing actually on the Venezuelan U.S. accusing Venezuela of supporting terrorism. President Bush is accusing the Venezuelan government of supporting terrorism, as we said. And on Wednesday, Bush said Latin American should reject what he called the vision of the terrorist. President Bush is quoted, "The stakes are high in South America, as the recent standoff in the Andes show. The region is facing an increasingly stark choice, to quietly accept the vision of the terrorists and the demagogues, or to actively support democratic leaders like President Uribe from Colombia. I made my choice. I'm standing with courageous leadership that believes in freedom and peace." Referring to Colombia, of course. Chavez has called for negotiations with the FARC to resolve Colombia's internal crisis. And in español, por supuesto, el presidente Bush está acusando al gobierno venezolano de apoyar el terrorismo, como ya hemos mencionado ahorita. El miércoles, Bush dijo que los latinoamericanos deberían rechazar lo que llamó la visión de los terroristas. El presidente Bush dijo, "Hay mucho en juego en la América del Sur, como lo demuestra la reciente situación en los Andes. La región enfrenta una elección cada vez más fuerte, aceptar tranquilamente la visión de los terroristas y los demagogos o apoyar activamente a los líderes democráticos como el presidente Uribe colombiano. Yo hice mi elección. Estoy del lado del liderazgo valiente que cree en la libertad y la paz. Como sabemos, Chávez solicitó negociaciones con la FARC para resolver la crisis interna en Colombia." Y finalmente, Brazilians protest Rice visit. In Brazil, hundreds of students gathered in front of the foreign ministry in the capital, Brasilia, Thursday to protest a visit by Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Rice was in Brazil before heading to Chile, Student leader Felipe Vieira said he rejects the Bush administration's unilateralism. Felipe Vieira is quoted, "We're against the war, against any involvement of a country in another. The United States is not the world's police." At a news conference, end quote, of course. At the news conference, Rice refused to comment on reports that the Bush administration is considering adding Venezuela to a list of nations supporting terrorism. But she said that the U.S. concern about terrorism in Latin America. En español, para terminar. En Brasil, cientos de estudiantes se reunieron frente al Ministerio de Asuntos Exteriores en la capital Brasilia el jueves para protestar contra la visita de la secretaria del Estado, Condoleezza Rice. La secretaria de Estado estuvo en Brasil antes de dirigirse a Chile. El líder estudiantil Felipe Vieira dijo que rechaza el unilateralismo del gobierno de Bush. Felipe Vieira dijo, "Estamos en contra de la guerra, en contra de cualquier intervención de un país en otro. Estados Unidos no es la policía del mundo." En una conferencia de prensa, Rice se negó a hacer comentarios sobre información de que el gobierno de Bush está considerando de agregar a Venezuela a la lista de países que apoyan al terrorismo. Sin embargo, dijo que a Estados Unidos sí le preocupa mucho el terrorismo en América Latina. Estas son las noticias. These are some of the headlines in the headlines here.
No somos la policía del mundo, ¿eh?
So they say.
So they say. Yeah, we're not the police of the world, even though we might try to be. You're listening to Sferio, the local voice of our hemisphere here on WMBR Cambridge. We got another 15 minutes or so left, and I think we'll be doing some announcements and a brief Radialistas piece. But right now we'll hear a little bit back from Lila Downs. This is her song, Árboles de la Barrancada. De la Barranca.
De la Barranca.
De la Barranca. And, of course, we'd love to receive any calls from listeners who have questions or comments to share. 617-253-8810, 617-253-8810.
Florido, me puse a amar a un hombre así, con la ilusión de amor. Costa y arroz, yo te enseñaré chamar.
reports are coming in from all over the empire, from all over the world. The government has not yet issued any statement, but there seems to be no question
that Radio With a View appears on this station Sunday mornings from 10 to noon.
We still don't know what it is or where it comes from, but there's something there.
You bet there's something there. Economic democracy, human rights, truth and reconciliation, and just enough music to get your mind and body in sync.
Scientists and military men are already agreed on that. Whatever it is, it's something real.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea.
It appears the names of the people responsible for this phenomenon include Mark Stern and Dave Goodman.
Here in the nation's capital, there is anxiety and concern.
Radio With a View, Sunday mornings from 10 to noon on WMBR Cambridge. No longer an unidentified flying radio station.
That's right, we're an identified not flying radio station. That was a promotion program for another program, Radio With a View, on WMBR Cambridge. Now to close out our program, we're going to listen to a Radialistas production, which is an interview with the, let me get her name here for you, but she is the leader of the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador. And her name is Blanca Chancoso. And this interview is in Spanish only, but we'll interrupt it every once in a while to sort of lead those of you who do not understand Spanish along, so you can follow along with this interview.
Blanca, iniciemos con el tema de las nacionalidades indígenas. ¿Qué está pasando? ¿Qué puntos han expuesto ustedes como grupo étnico? ¿Cuáles han sido los lazos, los vínculos que han tenido con otros grupos sociales que están interesados también en el tema de integración y cultura dentro de América Latina?
Bueno, ha sido importante y como siempre un reto para los pueblos indígenas, Tlaconay, porque no es muy nuevo ni reciente que estemos planteando el asunto de los pueblos indígenas. Se ha venido planteando y tratando de plasmar en los análisis como temas de discusión con los diferentes sectores sociales a fin de que los aliados naturales estén claros también de esta situación de los pueblos. Pero ha sido un trabajo muy largo y que hoy en este Foro Mundial Alternativas nos ha permitido nuevamente replantearnos y hacer un llamado incluso para que sea un tema también dentro de los debates, de reflexiones que están llevando en el quehacer, en la búsqueda, ¿no es cierto?, de alternativas hacia de procesos que se llevan de soberanía, de ir cambiando en los diferentes países del mundo. Entonces hemos tenido que hablar para que esto de ser aliados naturales podamos entendernos dentro de un marco de una agenda que permita respetar. Entonces, este espacio abierto en estos días nos permitió nuevamente plantearles, hacer conocer cuál era nuestra inquietud y que ellos nuevamente retomen en sus discusiones. De ahí que en los diferentes documentos de las comisiones veo que está plasmado y una inclinación hacia la propuesta que hemos venido haciendo. ¿Qué?
And so that was, what was her name, Diana?
Blanca.
Blanca.
Blanca was talking in the in an interview in the alternative forum held where?
I'm not sure.
Well, in an alternative forum, just talking about what are the things that she is doing in Ecuador or the organization that she belongs to is doing in Ecuador, and she was talking about how the issue of indigenous issue and the indigenous rights issue has always been the table and has not yet gone underground or anything, but it's like quite the contrary. It's getting stronger and trying to find, looking for the natural allies in the rest of the struggle to become a better society, to find alternatives of developing and becoming a better society.
The forum was in Quito. It was called the Latin American Meeting of the World Forum of Alternatives.
So, of course, they were meeting in Quito, and they were talking about what, how, like, Ecuadorian indigenous people are getting involved into, in just into this worldwide, or at least Latin American, Latin American
view. The search for alternatives to sort of neoliberal model of governing, I think.
Yes, and economic development.
Yeah. So let's continue listening to what she has to say.
Es un buen inicio. Para que incluso esto, porque hay que profundizar aún todavía, que debatan sobre lo que es la plurinacionalidad, por ejemplo, y la propuesta de significado de plurinacionalidad que muchos creen que es como un beneficio para los indígenas. Y nosotros hemos planteado que no es para los indígenas, lo que sí es una propuesta desde los indígenas para que en respeto mutuo, en condición igualitaria, podamos avanzar en los procesos de liberación, en los procesos revolucionarios que se quiere hacer, ¿cierto? Y esto del socialismo, ¿cómo va a ser un socialismo si nuevamente un pueblo histórico, un pueblo milenario y de origen, que nuevamente quede desconocido, deslegitimado? No era justo.
Blanca, ¿se ve un futuro más intercultural, tanto en el Ecuador como en nuestros países vecinos?
Mira, yo creo que el futuro de intercultura puede ser un buen inicio, ¿no? Y yo digo más bien, la interculturalidad es la relación de convivencia que podemos mantenernos dentro de una vida cotidiana de los pueblos, ¿no es cierto?, en el marco de la interculturalidad. Pero es muy diferente el asunto de la plurinacionalidad. La plurinacionalidad es aceptar lo diferente del otro y también reconocer con los mismos derechos, en los mismos términos de igualdad del otro, ¿no es cierto? Pero que tú también te sientes reflejado como un pueblo que diferente, al igual que yo como pueblo diferente.
So she is making a difference here between multinationalism and multiculturalism. And she's saying that, multiculturalism is a great start where we start to respect one another's cultures, but that we need to go further and we need to embrace multinationalism.
Because I don't know if you remember, Kendra, and this was new to me when we went to Ecuador, that to them, like, they're like being a Quechua, being a Achuar, they call like their nationality.
Right.
Is Quechua or Achuar. It's not like their culture is Quechua or Achuar. It's like their nationality. Of course, they're Ecuadorian, but their nationality is Quechua. That's what they were saying. So I think in this case, the plurinationality, that's what they're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, being Ecuadorian, but also being of the nationality of the Achuars and the Shuars,
mm-hmm.
which is even more flexible because it's even transboundary,
mm-hmm.
as we know.
And so she's asking for, we need a world system in which my nation, as I feel, think of it as my indigenous nation, receives the same respect and rights as other nations.
Yeah, and some people, and Blanca was saying that, just beginning this excerpt, what is this about the plurinational debate? And she was saying that maybe some people are stating that it's just a benefit given to the indigenous people. And she disagrees with that. She says that it comes from the indigenous people because they are like the most affected by the lack of plurinational and pluriculturalism. But it is a platform that is, it's a platform to be used for the better and for the change and for the revolution of society, not just for a simple benefit to the indigenous people. She's asking, Blanca is asking, how can a socialism that is dignified socialism lacks the respect of plurinationalism or the respect for pluriculturalism.
Mm-hmm.
So she's saying that just to start the change, and even if even if socialism wants to work, it has to start with a view of respect and belief in other ways of living.
Mm-hmm. And thanks, Rory, for that translation. We have just a few moments left, so we'd like to make a few announcements. There is a showing of a film tonight at 7:30 p.m. At the Militant Labor Forum on Bennington Street in East Boston. And that film is Con la Memoria en el Futuro, With Our Memory on the Future. And it's a film on women and the Cuban Revolution. So it's a sort of film that takes the women's perspective on the revolutionary process in Cuba and their perspectives on that and on women's right and the role of women in Cuba. Again, 7:30 p.m. tonight at the Militant Labor Forum, 13 Bennington Street in East Boston. The other announcement is that there will be a showing next week, Thursday, March 20th at 6 p.m., of The Coyote's Trail, a film which is a film series on the Latin American immigrant experience. That's the film series, and their film next week is called The Guest Worker, and it's about a man who spent 40 years harvesting American crops and is now a guest worker in the United States government's H-2A visa program. So this is the program that is sort of formalizing a guest worker situation and that allows him safe passage over the border, but gives him no hope of citizenship into the future. So again, that's the film The Guest Worker. Next week, Thursday, 6 p.m., it's at Psy Auditorium. And a final announcement, this Sunday, there's going to be an event related to the upcoming Fossil Fools Day, which is going to be on April 1st, kind of like April Fool's Day. That event is this Sunday, 3 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., and it says, roll up, the climate circus is in town. So this is a place to sort of get resources, share skills, and do high-impact actions to make a difference about climate change. So I think that's all the time we have. Do you want to, Jasmine, tell us what that event time and place is for Bhopal?
Sure. So it's this Wednesday in room 6120 at MIT. Aquini Freechild, who's representing Environmental Health Fund, will be speaking about Bhopal issues and what students or what people in our community can do to help. So please check it out. And also check out Lobby 10 in MIT. We'll be faxing urgent action to the Indian Prime Minister. So yeah, we hope to see you there.
Next week, Wednesday. That's all the time we have. We'd like to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. And if you missed any of these event announcements or would like to learn more or share a comment, feel free to call us here at the station, 617-253-8810, or email us at sperio, S-P-H-E-R-I-O, at WMBR.